And now, The Low Post.
Welcome to The Low Post podcast on a Friday morning where it is December 10th, which means when we all reconvene after a weekend of revelry. I don't know that I have a lot of revelry in my life, actually. It will be 2 days before a whole entire slew of NBA players becomes trade eligible, which means trade season is here. The chatter is heating up. Portland fired its GM last week, launching a whole round of trade rumors that their new GM, Joe Cronin, sought to quell during his introductory press conference, saying, "We are enhancing. We are not tearing down. We are enhancing our 11-15 train wreck of a team where everybody is injured and we're not winning any games." The Pacers might be open for business, might not be open for business, might have always been open for business. It's unclear how much business they're open to help us suss everything out. And oh, by the way, the Lakers still stink and lost to the Grizzlies with 22 turnovers last night. Can they do anything? Bobby Marks, how are you?
Hello, Zach. How are you?
Woo! It's been a wild week in the NBA. So early December is usually kind of quiet, and hasn't been so quiet.
No, and we're going to get starting getting busy, come December 15th when most of these free agents can become trade eligible. It's ironic, though. I don't want to throw cold water on December 15th, but the last trade that happened right on December 15th was your then New Jersey Nets traded Terrence Williams to the Rockets in 2010, I believe, for two first-round picks.
Two first-round picks. Talk about a trade that could never, ever happen today. How did that happen?
I don't know. Terrence had a lot of value because of his versatility, and we wound up getting a Sasha Vujicic. And
Vujicic, come on now.
I know. I didn't even want to say. I just wanted to say Sasha because I knew I was going to get ridiculed about
one of the most punchable players in the last 20 years for some reason. Just I don't know if it was the hair, the little like soccer player headband, the little thin headband he wore sometimes. Very punchable.
Well, before we get into a 10 second story, when we did the trade and we got him, I think we were shooting 26% from three for that year, and he came in and hit four threes the first game, and I said, "This guy's great. This guy," and then I think he just shot 30% for the rest of the year. But it's one of those deals where when you don't have anything and you get a little bit of something, it's nice for at least for that one game.
I thought you were going to say we traded for him and then I saw him in person and I also wanted to punch his face. I thought that's what you were going to say. I thought you were going to elaborate on the punchability.
Well, we had a great wives room when we had Maria Sharapova and Kim Kardashian. I mean, that was our wives group as far as our girlfriends group back then. I mean, talk about a high profile.
That's a scene. Without any, I mean, it's just a scene. The paparazzi probably want to get in there.
I don't know about paparazzi in Newark, though. There were not much paparazzi in Newark.
You're saying it very, I say Newark. You're going like accelerated. Newark.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, so the big news of the week involved the Indiana Pacers. The Athletic wrote a big story about how the Pacers, who at that point I think were 11-16 or 10-16, and were, as I called them, the most aggressively boring and unwatchable team in the NBA, were open for business. And Herb Simon, who will cheap out on every aspect of running a team and avoid the tax as if it is death itself, was suddenly willing to detonate the team, go in the tank, do the thing that the Pacers, to their credit, have never ever done, which is trade all these guys for future picks, bottom out, attendance to hell, who cares? Let's do it, let's rebuild. And much ado was made of this report. Let's just sort of big picture. And since then, of course, the Pacers have won two consecutive games, including a blowout of the Knicks. They have a better point differential than several current playoff and play-in teams in the Eastern Conference, suggesting that if they could just get out of their own freaking way in crunch time, they might actually be able to make a run here. All of these players, their top four guys, minus TJ Warren, who's injured, are all good, talented players. How do you read this? How real is this? I have my own opinion, but I'm interested to hear what your take is.
Yeah, I mean, I think anything time they were, 11-16 out of the play-in. They, as you said, they've won two games. There's nobody that's untradeable except for Malcolm Brogdon on that roster who signed that extension, right? Like, you're open. I think you're open for business, but to what extent? And, are you just willing to take the best deal possible for Miles Turner or Caris LeVert. I think Sabonis, I think, is in a different level than those other guys based on him having certainly 3 years left, you know, this year and 2 years where those guys are free agents in 2024. I think if you wanted to put Sabonis out there, you could get a haul for him. I really do. I mean, I think for draft pick wise, I think there are teams out there that would certainly, you know, multiple first round picks here. So I think if I'm Indiana and they've always done it kind of the right way where they've never really detonated, right? They went when they signed Bogdanovic a couple years ago, they kind of just Thaddeus Young, that those type of moves here. They give Malcolm Brogdon the extension. They're a team to watch, but I'm not ready to put like a major for sale sign on the lawn of the Indiana Pacers.
I will believe the Indiana Pacers tank when I see it, and not a moment before then. I don't believe that they will sell everybody. I don't believe they want to sell everybody. What I believe is this. They're not good. They're disappointed in their team. The fit is awkward. I mean, Miles Turner, credit to Shams Charania and Jared Weiss of The Athletic. They got Miles Turner to sound off and voice what a lot of us assumed he was feeling, which is, hey, man, I'm really good. I don't want to just stand in the corner. Like, I love Domas. Those two, to their credit, really get along well. It could have been an awkward situation. They get along well. But, like, I don't want to just – I'm not like, you know, Bruce Bowen, but a big man. I don't want to be that. I want to be something more than that, and they don't want me to be that here. And they're like, whoa, okay. But I just don't believe that they're gonna trade all these guys. What I do believe is one of the benefits of having – let's say four guys in LeVert, Brogdon, Turner, and Sabonis who probably in the deepest recesses of their souls all believe I'm the best player on the team. I bet if you gave them all truth serum, they all think I'm really the best guy. I'm the most important guy. Well, and part of that and the overlapping skill sets and the fact that, you know, 1 + 1 + 1 + 1 just equals 4, doesn't equal 7 like you want it to equal. Part of that is you can probably split the baby where maybe you trade one or even two of these guys for future assets, keep the other two, and you probably don't get all that much worse. Or maybe, especially if TJ Warren can come back at some point in the future, maybe you can sort of split the difference here and rebuild a little bit but remain relevant, or as at least as quasi-relevant as they are now. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, I mean, I think you can, you know, certainly LeVert, if I was going to rank guys who I don't think will be on the Pacers roster come – you know, 301 on February 10th, I think LeVert probably would be the guy, right?
I've heard the same thing.
Just from the wing standpoint, and a guy that was extension eligible. I mean, back when Brogdon got that extension, and I think there was a little bit to that where him signing that would have taken him off the board, right?
So now they were talking. That was down to the wire.
Yeah. And, you know, $17-18 million, got 2 years as a wing, has certainly struggled with some health issues the last couple of years here. So I think that would be the guy here. And then I think if there's nothing that makes sense for Turner, certainly Sabonis, then you just kind of hit a little bit of a reset and you wait until you go into the offseason when there aren't many prime free agents. And then maybe you look at kind of what the trade market is going to be. But I would be real surprised if two out of those three players are moved. Do I think a guy like maybe Jeremy Lamb, who's on an expiring, you know, potentially, that's a name. But we've talked about it.
That is a name. You're correct that is a name. That is literally a correct statement. Jeremy Lamb is the name of an NBA player on an expiring contract.
But they've done a good job. I mean, they've got, what, like 6 or 7 guys in that 10 to 21, 22 range here where they've got tradable assets. They are not going into the luxury tax for one thing. That ain't happening here. And they're basically skirting that. I think they're like $1.4 million below it. They're not doing that. But yeah, I think LeVert would probably be the guy if you're asking me as far as teams looking for help on the wing. He would be it.
You know, I'm going to keep my eye on Sabonis, not for a trade in the next 10 days to 2 weeks, but for this reason. In that Miles Turner piece that I mentioned that The Athletic wrote, Kevin Pritchard, the president of basketball, I don't even know what these people's titles are anymore, the czar of the Pacers currently, has this quote that made me think when I read it, boy, I wonder what Domantas Sabonis thinks of this. Here's the quote. This was Kevin Pritchard. At some point in time, we've got to figure out how to manufacture that real star, Pritchard said. We had it with Paul George. He had an it factor, and so did Victor Oladipo, and so we're trying to get that. But we think that a couple of these players could become that too. So my editorializing, there's the careful caveat. We may already have it in the gym. But that's the biggest challenge is, in this sort of marketplace, how do you get a star? It's hard for us to sign one in free agency. That's a challenge. But there are other ways to do it, and I think we can do it. If I'm Domantas Sabonis, I read that, or my agent sent it to me, and I'm like, whoa, I just made two all-star teams. Like, I'm not the real star. Now, look, you and I can sit here and quibble. Was he the 12th all-star in the Eastern Conference? Did he deserve? I didn't have him on my roster last year. I had Bam Adebayo over him for one of the last couple spots. But it doesn't matter. He made the all-star teams, and players don't become Domantas Sabonis by thinking less of themselves than we think of themselves. He thinks of himself as a star, and he should be. That's how you become a guy who can hang 30 and 20 on people on any given night. I look at that quote, and I'm like, I wonder if that's going to reverberate a little bit. When I read that, I kind of jolted up in my chair. That's unusual, I think. And I think Kevin Pritchard's being honest. Like, we want honesty, but that wouldn't surprise me if that reverberates a little bit.
Well, and then to follow that up, you know, they also addressed the article with their own, those players. I don't know if you've seen that where they met with them individually and basically, which is kind of rare to do, but we're in this day and age where everything is out there, where they basically talked about the trade rumors with LeVert and Sabonis and Turner here. So yeah, I don't know if that will come back. Is Sabonis in that level where Paul George was when he was Indiana, or where he is now in the Clippers? No.
Those are all NBA players. Paul George and Victor Oladipo that one year.
Yeah, I think he's a top 30 player, but probably trending in that 25 to 30 range. That's kind of where I see him right now.
I don't think Kevin Pritchard is wrong. I just think that's something that, whoa, I don't know that I would have said that. I don't know that I would have said that publicly. For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facility safe and your people safer. Call or click Grainger.com or just stop by. If only starting your fitness journey was as easy as starting this podcast, the truth is all the lift big, get big, and beach body ready in 3 weeks pressure stops most of us from even starting. And starting is what matters most. It's everything. Wherever you're beginning, wherever you want to be, Peloton encourages you to just start. With thousands of classes to get you moving and doing what you can. If that's a 10-minute low impact class, they've got those. And when you're ready, take it up a gear with a 30-minute live DJ ride. Start with Peloton and find instructors that will keep you motivated to stay on your fitness journey, learn the basics, and build from there. Remember, doing something is everything. Get started with a Peloton bike or bike plus rental at onepeloton.com/bike/rentals. Terms apply. So let's go through this. So you mentioned Sabonis could get a haul. Turner maybe less of a haul. And I think if I'm the Pacers and I put Sabonis on the trade market, the comp I'm trying to make is Nikola Vucevic,
yes,
who got Orlando. I said it at the time, and look, I've been wrong about a million things. I'll be wrong about a million more. I said it at the time. I don't understand why Magic fans are panning this trade. I think this is a home run for the Magic. I think the Bulls are probably paid a heavier price than they wanted. The Magic got Wendell Carter Jr., who, by the way, maybe has been better than Vucevic this season. Now, Vuce had COVID, and he'll start shooting it better, but like Wendell Carter Jr. has been good. Two first-round picks, one of which you were pretty certain would be a decent lottery pick and indeed turned into a decent lottery pick in Franz Wagner, and they had to take on no long-term money. That's the comp. So I put it to you, Bobby. In a league where everyone has a center, and centers are not going out of style, but if you're not an elite, elite center, if you're just sort of a replacement-level starting center, the interest in you is not super real. Now, both these guys are better than replacement-level centers, but they're not elite, elite all-NBA-level centers. Who actually needs a center? Who's going to pay that Vooch price for Sabonis or something a little bit less but still enticing enough to get the Pacers to act for Miles Turner? Who is it? There's only – I can tell you there's one obvious team, and after that, you got to start digging.
Yeah, I mean, I have a list here. I've broken down in four different categories of buyers, sellers, holding pattern, wild cards.
Of course you did. Of course you have a list with four categories. You have a matrix. You don't just have a list. You have matrices. You have matrices. I hated matrices in math. I actually don't know what they are, but continue.
And it's also highlighted too.
You got a lot of problems, Bobby.
But when you look at teams that are buyers that, you know, are going to be active, I mean, you're looking at teams like Atlanta, Dallas, New York, you know.
But I'm talking about needs a center. Buyers and centers. Where do your matrices overlap?
I mean, probably if you are looking at a team like Portland, right? If you're looking at like who has Nurkic, right, on an expiring. If you're, as Joe Cronin said, we are looking to enhance our roster, but you have a first round pick that's already going out in the Larry Nance trade. So you're going to have to do something as far as future assets, as far as lifting protection to that. So basically you got to maybe take some protection off that or eliminate, which is a high risk move, but team like New York, right? I mean, team like New York would probably be, but what do you have to give to get Miles Turner? It's probably would cost you one of your young players, right? I would think. And then probably salary filler and maybe a first round pick.
How about this trade for New York? Because I do think New York, they're struggling. Their defense, I think, is 21st or 22nd in the league. Not where Tibbs wants it to be. I mean, you know, Tibbs is the grouchiness equation is off the charts right now. New York is on my list of Miles Turner teams. I don't think they would be a Sabonis team, but I think they'd be a Miles Turner team. And by the way, boy, do they need someone to help open the floor for Julius Randle. Like the spacing that Miles Turner could provide and the defense would be perfect there. Nerlens Noel plus Obi Toppin plus a future first-round pick. Now they've got a Charlotte pick that's lottery protected, a Dallas pick that's top 10 protected, and all their own picks. I don't know if that's enough for the pay. Like, Nerlens Noel's fine, whatever. He's a good backup center, spot starter. Toppin, look, the Knicks fans love Toppin. They chant OB, OB every time he ties his shoes. They love him. You're just not getting Miles Turner without a good young player going out. And I'm not even sure Toppin is enough. The Pacers may be like, we want Quickly, too. And boy, I like Quickly a lot off the bench. Mitchell Robinson, I think the kind of – the bloom is off the rose a little bit, and he's an unrestricted free agent. So Nerlens plus Toppin plus at least one first-round pick and maybe a couple seconds. The Knicks have, I think, some Detroit seconds that are good, potentially good second-round picks. Does that get it done? That's the best I could do, really.
I don't think it does. Now, maybe if you add the Dallas pick and another pick to it, maybe I'm a little bit of intrigued. And I think it especially depends on what you think of Obi as far as moving forward. Is he kind of a blue chip prospect?
He's a purple chip prospect. I like Obi Toppin. He's got athleticism. He plays hard. He's got just a verve to him that I like. He moves around the floor actively. I think he'll get better defensively. He's still pretty upright. He's also shooting 8 of 41 on threes. Like the three-point shot has to come for him to be a blue chip prospect. But I think he's interesting. If I'm keeping Sabonis, I'm like, well, that kind of fits. Like I'm interested enough to see how that looks. The obvious center team is Charlotte, who is a good team that's a center away from being a potentially like we could win a playoff series kind of team. Now, obviously they've been ravaged by COVID right now. They have half their team in health and safety protocols. Do you see a package there? And I think they'd be open to either one, but they've liked Turner in the past, so my assumption has been they will call about Turner.
Yeah, I mean, I think it would have to start with probably PJ Washington, right? That's kind of your focus there. And then to get the money work, then you're probably looking like at Plumlee, and then just filling in from there. I mean, that's kind of a Washington, Plumlee. They owe a first to New York that's got some protection on it. That's kind of your framework of some type of deal.
We have the exact same framework, which is Washington, Plumlee, future first round pick. You just got to love PJ Washington for that deal to be workable for Indiana.
Yep.
I think I'm in with PJ Washington. I like him. I'd hang out with him. I'd take a stroll with him. I don't know if I love PJ Washington. The Pacers obviously have coveted Hayward before, but Charlotte offered him more money than anyone else, and that's why he is on Charlotte. I don't know that there's a deal to be made there. And then you've got all sorts of tax issues, and you've got to send out more money and all that. Charlotte's the one that I look at as the obvious one. I just, you know, it's not that easy to find a deal unless they're willing to really get crazy and throw one of their three draft picks they just picked or another future first or something like that. Can we get into the wild ones now?
Let's go.
The Brooklyn Nets. Any deal to be made there? They could use a center.
I know. They're in my holding pat. Well, they're in my buyers. They're in my buyers because of the wild card named Kyrie Irving. And I don't see a deal to get a center there based on you basically have three players making $35 million plus with Harden, Durant, and Kyrie.
Yeah, they just got no salary to send.
You know, you have Joe Harris. Yeah, that's your middle guy. There's no $9 and $10 million guys. And, you know, I mean, Cam Thomas is a nice player, but you know.
Boy, I like watching Cam Thomas because Cam Thomas was one of those guys who he gets on the court and he's like, Kevin Durant, James Harden, hey, can you guys give me the ball? I'm Cam Thomas. Boy, what do you think you are? I'm Cam Thomas.
That was the big thing, Zach. When I, you know, he was one of the kids who I did the prep work for his interviews. And we worked with him a bunch of times, and it was just the overconfidence had to dial it back because that was the concern that teams had. It was a little bit of a turnoff. You know,
I want him to dial it up. I want him to wave off Kevin Durant setting a screen for him. I want him to just start taking half court shots when he's open. I want him to dial it up.
He is, he's not shy. He's not shy at all. So, but I don't see it for a center. I don't see a deal out there for Brooklyn.
Now, I know you and I have both done the exercise because you have to. Ian Begley, our old friend, has reported this week that the Nets would listen, are listening, if you call. If for some reason you are a general manager and you get on the phone, so yeah, can we talk about Kyrie? The Nets are and will listen. I think that report by Ian was accurate. I have done fake Kyrie trades before. The Pacers would not be a fake Kyrie destination. Kyrie for Simmons has obviously been the sort of hottest fake trade of the year. I just have never really heard that has any traction. These teams don't even know what Kyrie Irving is doing. Will he get vaccinated? Will he play for us? What's going on? You know, there's been these rumors that have been out there. You know, Nick Wright, I think, was one of the first guys to say it, that there's rumors he'd retire if the Nets. So needless to say, Kyrie Irving's trade value is taking a little bit of a hit. There are some fun, two or three fun and like not insane trade destinations for him. And I think the Nets, look, when you have James Harden, who still doesn't look like James Harden to me, I don't care that the free throws are up. I don't care that his numbers are getting better. He still does not look like James Harden to me, and that's a little concerning. But if you have Harden and Durant, you are in a position where you don't need to get dollar for dollar for Kyrie Irving. You can be like, look, we just need some – like we're getting zero from him right now. He's not even with us. If you just give us like two or three useful role players who can shoot or defend or both, that helps our team. Bobby, can you give me anything?
Well, I think the obvious team would be a team like Dallas, right? Like a team like the Mavericks, but I don't know if any of those role players have appeal to Brooklyn, would have appeal to Brooklyn. And let's just take Porzingis out of the equation, right? Like guys like Hardaway Jr., Jalen Brunson, Dorian Finney-Smith, Kleber, like that package of guys. That's like what you said, like, hey, can we just get two or three guys to kind of fill in the blanks, you know, our roster that we've got some voids at.
But so every one of those guys you just named would look awesome in Brooklyn. Like, yeah. I don't know why the Nets would turn their nose up at those guys.
I know, and I think the only way that Brooklyn would consider something like that, if they know for sure that this guy is not going to be vaccinated, that and they are not going to have him, and that he will go into the offseason potentially as a free agent because he has a player option in his contract, then I would have to really think hard about that, something like that type of package.
Or you're just done with him. I mean, and yeah. I don't know. Look, the Nets people do not want to talk about this when you try to engage them, but I don't. It wouldn't surprise me if they were just like, we're ready to wash our hands of this. It just hasn't worked. It also wouldn't surprise me, like, again, pointedly, they have not closed the door on him coming back. If they wanted to close the door, they would. And that makes me think, for whatever reason, and I don't even want to care about the reasons, they're still a scintilla of their bodies and souls that hope and think maybe he'll come back this year.
Well, that's the hope, right? I mean, that's the hope. And I think you're going to wait until the very last minute to figure that out. And you, I mean, let's be honest, as right now, they're sitting with the top record in the Eastern Conference, but they don't scare me. Like, they don't, I'm not ready to put them up there. I thought the Chicago game exposed them a little bit. You know, basically DeRozan and LaVine could get whatever they want. And as you said, are we ever going to see kind of that James Harden? And I don't, like, the whole foul, you know, getting to the free throw line and all that, I just think he is a little bit of a step slow. I don't think he can get to his spots. I think they don't have a guy that can kind of, besides Durant, get to the rim. So Kyrie is that guy, but you might be waiting forever for him.
So I just think you nailed it on Harden. The free throws are now back to where they were last year. He's averaging this about the same amount of free throws. He had multiple games in the last 2 weeks where he's had 15 free throws, or last 3 weeks. To me, it's like he's just not consistently beating guys off the dribble that he used to be able to beat off the dribble easily. Like, I look back at the playoffs last year before he got hurt, and I remember saying, I don't know what Evan Fournier did to James Harden and James Harden's family, but he would get Evan Fournier on switches, and it was just like, no chance. You're in the dust. You're either in the dust or you stumble so far backward on my step back that I'm wide open. They played the Knicks. I was at the game last week or whenever the heck it was. He couldn't get by Evan Fournier. He's kind of just driving into people because he can't get by them and doing the sort of thing where he puts his hands out and hopes to make contact and barfs up a floater. Look, there are games where he is getting by people, which makes you think.
Hey, he got by Luka.
Yeah, well.
and then Tim McMahon's story came back that he came into camp at 260. Like, okay.
And those games make you think, okay, maybe it's the playoffs and we have a day off at least between every game. By then, the hamstring has gotten even healthier. Like, maybe that guy's still there. And then three more games will go by and he's just struggling to get by people. I don't know. The most realistic Kyrie Irving destinations are Dallas. And you can make any deal you want. Hardaway Jr. plus Dwight Powell. Hardaway Jr. plus Reggie Bullock plus Finney Smith. Whatever you want to do. I think those would help the Nets if you're going to get zero from Kyrie. The other one is the Clippers. That's the wildest one because they have this sort of poo-poo platter of guys making $15 million a year who are all okay. Like, Luke Kennard's had a nice bounce back season. I don't think they want to trade Terrence Mann at all. Can they trade Terrence Mann this year? I don't think they can.
They can't. Right? No, because he signed that extension.
Marcus Morris is become an availability problem for them, who helps when he plays, but he's missed half the games. You know, like, those are kind of guys that would help the Nets. And if you're the Clippers, is Kyrie, like, obviously you'd have to get permission to sit down with Kyrie and say, like, are you going to play? Can you get vaccinated? Like, what's the situation here? But they've looked at third stars over the last couple of years. It hasn't gotten a lot of attention, but they've sniffed around some third stars to pair with Kawhi and Paul George. And if you think this year, let's just say you think this year is maybe a lost year or just a total long shot year, like maybe Kawhi comes back, we get lucky. You can take that kind of risk, but and people have made fake Russ trades for them, fake John Wall trades for them because of this sort of collection of guys, okay guys in that salary range they have. They're not taking those guys. Those guys are you know, injuries have really taken a toll on their athleticism. John Wall hasn't played this year. Russ has been like kind of not awesome with the Lakers. Their salaries are disastrous. Kyrie, when he plays, he was all NBA last year. So I think that's the fun one, but I just don't really see much there. What about Milwaukee for Miles Turner?
They're my holding pattern. I just don't see, you know, besides basically Brook, right? That's kind of the big contract, and he's out indefinitely with that back injury. You've got draft picks that are going out to Houston, multiple draft picks that are going out. Where do you get the numbers as far as to get up there? You know,
Can't trade a first, right? I don't think the Bucks can't trade a first. They can trade a bunch of seconds, but not a first.
Not a first. Because of those multiples that are going to New Orleans, you know, from the Holiday trade. But I just, you know, with Holiday, Giannis, Middleton, high numbers, and then there's another team that's dropped. Grayson Allen's he's got a poison pill, but his extension isn't that high of a number to, if you ever, and who's basically, who's been very good for them. You know, DiVincenzo would be your, basically your guy.
I was going to say,
that would be your guy. And that would be, as far as him, he's been playing some G League games or he's been assigned there. Like, that's kind of your draft asset slash player would be him.
Well, when you said Grayson Allen's played well for them, I agree. And my thought was he's played so well, well enough, that if they'll listen to Brook Lopez plus Dante DiVincenzo plus 2 second-round picks or 3 second-round picks, I might make that trade. I made the mistake. Logging into Twitter is generally a mistake. And I made that mistake a couple of days ago and started scrolling around. And it's like these 8 minutes of life just are taken from you. And you see memes and people being mean and nasty to each other. And it's just like so depressing. But I saw some tweets from Bucks fans that were retweeted or amplified about how Brook Lopez is better than Miles Turner. Why is this even a discussion? And I said, look, I get you love Brook Lopez. You just won a championship last year. He's been amazing for the Bucks. Had a couple years where he was a legit all-defense candidate. He just had back surgery. Like, you're really going to turn your nose up at Miles Turner, who's a better three-point shooter significantly on higher volume, at least as good of a rim protector. Let's be pessimistic and say as good of a rim protector and ignore the fact that Miles Turner is leading the league in shot blocking for the second straight year and all that, and that opponents shoot like 45% when he's at the rim, which is always number one or number two in the league. Brook Lopez just had back surgery. Are they optimistic he's coming back in the regular season? Yes. Do we know for sure what happens when people have back surgery? No, you don't know for sure. You're really going to just be like, oh, Brook Lopez, we don't need Miles Turner because we have Brook Lopez. I think that's a trade that the Bucks, who are absolutely in win-now mode, I think they're the favorites to get to the finals out of the East, which to me makes them maybe the favorites to win the title. That's a deal you'd have to consider if it's available. I just don't think it's enough for the Pacers.
Yeah, I don't either. I don't. I mean, I think certainly from Milwaukee, kind of your window to win is now. I would do that. But I don't. I think Indiana can do better than that package.
The Low Post fans, listen up. Have you heard you can listen to episodes of this very show ad-free on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership? That's right. All your favorite The Low Post episodes can be heard on Amazon Music ad-free. But that's not all. You can listen to other top podcasts like First Take and Pardon the Interruption ad-free as well. They also have favorite shows like The Daily, Part of My Take, and Up First, all without ads. You know what this means? Uninterrupted listening, so no more cliffhangers. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts, so we know they definitely have something for you. And it's already included in your Prime membership. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/low. That's amazon.com/low to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because of the eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
We haven't talked about the internet's favorite, Miles Turner, maybe Domas Sabonis, one of the two pick'em trade destinations. Can you guess who it is?
Boston?
No. Why does Boston need those guys anymore?
I don't. They don't.
I'm
they
like, don't. I must be president of the Time Lord fan club, because every time people are trying to fake trade the Celtics a center, I'm like, they have an amazing center. I love Robert Williams.
A team, it's probably a team that has no chance at all. Probably like the Lakers.
Oh, nope.
I don't know. Who is it? Memphis? No, they don't need them. I don't know. Who is it?
Golden State.
Oh, Golden State, of course.
Talk me through it.
It's not Bob Myers' DNA. It is not his DNA to do an in-season trade. I know they did one, I think, last year to shed money. But when that team, when that dynasty team was rolling from like 14 to 19, They did not make one in-season trade at all. Like, they don't, they just kind of roll with who they are. And they, I mean, yeah, if you want to basically put all your, you know, Wiseman, Kuminga, Moody, guys like that out there, you know, cobble together that those three players, then that would, you know, start the rebuild in Indiana a little bit, you know, get that ball going. But I don't know. I don't see it, just because of, you know, unless Bob thinks that this is kind of like, hey, Art, we got to, like, this is our window right now. Like, we're going to do something, you know, Sabonis, Turner type thing. I think they have enough. I think they have enough to win it all, but I don't know. I mean, of course, this team is different than the KD team and even the 14-15 team, but I just don't see it there, Zach.
The window is open. The window's been blown open by a hurricane. Like, the window, there isn't even a window. There's no screen. The window's open. But look, here's the thing. When they lost that first Phoenix game and Ayton just looked like a giant among Lilliputians in the post, there was a sort of overreaction, I think, of, well, the Warriors need a center, and Wiseman's not going to be the answer, and Looney can only play 15, 18 minutes a game. They need a center. And then the Pacers stuff blew up. It's like, okay, naturally, here's a match. I've shaken some trees. I think you're reading it correctly for now. The Warriors are 21-4. They have the best record in the NBA. They have the best defense in the NBA and a top three offense. They're not in a hurry to do anything dramatic to their roster, especially since something dramatic is about to happen to their roster with the return of Klay Thompson. I think they're just like, okay, chill. It looks like, all evidence suggests, we have enough right now that when we play small with Draymond at center, or Otto Porter, Bealitsa, JTA, who pick them at center, we're pretty damn good. The other thing is, but I get the idea. The idea is, we can add a player like that, one of these Pacers big men, without trading literally 1 minute of meaningful rotation basketball from our current team. That's kind of appealing. The problem is that there are other problems. Number one, they're so far over the tax that every additional dollar is like, I mean, you do the math. It's,
we're
like,
not even, yeah, we're in a different level.
It's for like $28 or something.
We're in a level 8 tax bracket, which is so
if you don't, yeah, they're just like, I don't even know if the CBA covers like how far
it
over.
It doesn't. It ends after a certain thing, and then you have to do the math manually. So they've blown away the tax bracket there.
That's pretty funny. So unless it's like an exact salary match, the owners are going to look at this and be like, is this worth a gazillion more dollars? And Wiseman plus Kuminga, which is the deal construction where you're not taking anything from your current roster that's currently playing, is like $3 million or $4 million short of a current match. If you add Moody, you get closer, but now you're really just trading everything you've picked in the last couple of years. Wiseman, Kuminga, Looney kind of gets you there, but now you are trading away from your current team, and you can poo-poo Looney if you want. They love Looney, and Looney's been really good for their team. So I don't necessarily know that I see it. You also have, like, I wonder, it would be interesting to talk to the Warriors brass and be like, which one, this in theory, you could get either one. Which one would you want? Sabonis has the playmaking instincts and the feel that I like offensively. Defensively, he's a minus. Also, his playmaking stems often from him having the ball a lot and holding the ball a lot, and they don't have holding the ball in their DNA. Flip it around, and he's not a shooter. They've tried to make him a shooter this year. He's not a shooter. Doesn't seem to want. Every time he takes a three, it seems so reluctant. It's like he does. Like, I almost feel like I wish I could see his face. I bet he's frowning every time he winds up to take a three. Turner gives me the shooting, which I crave and need. Gives me defense, which I crave and I guess need, even though I have the number one defense in the NBA. I don't know, whatever. Maybe I need it for Ayton or Jokic or whatever. But the feel has always been the thing with Miles Turner. And that's when he popped off this week about, I want the ball more. I want to pick and roll more. I want to be more involved in the offense. Like, that's cool. And I think you can probably do that a little bit. But when Miles Turner gets the ball in open space, I do not have a lot of confidence that he's going to make the correct read at the correct speed. Like, I just don't. So I don't know. I bet the Warriors look at both those guys like, yeah, interesting. If the price was right, maybe. If the price is wrong, to use a Happy Gilmore reference, if the price is wrong, maybe I'm not that interested.
Well, and if the price is wrong, then you've just lost basically all your tradable assets, right? Like, that's kind of – that's the deal there. And I think you're right about Golden State as far as not being in a rush to do anything, figure out where they are come February 10th, and if there's something that makes sense, you do it. And if not, you roll with the current roster.
Let's switch gears and sort of go around the trade landscape rapid fire.
Yep.
Have you heard any concern from Nets world about James Harden's impending free agency and the fact that the extension remains unsigned?
No. Based on lack of teams with cap space, and if it came to a problem where Harden was going to decline that option and test free agency, that you always have the sign and trade option out there to kind of recoup what you lost. Now, my concern, and this is not talking for the Nets, is that, like, what's the number going to be? Is it still going to be $270 million for James Harden?
Yep. Spoiler alert. Yes, it will be. It will be all the money.
Yeah. And so, you know, it's funny. Someone asked me a question last night about, you know, just shifting gears real quick, Bradley Beal. Like, would you still play Bradley Beal, that contract or an extension or a max, supermax? And I said, yeah, I would.
Can you imagine after all this rigmarole over the last 3 years of Bradley Beal rigmarole? I don't even know what rigmarole is, but it's not great to experience, I don't think. If Tommy Shepard is like, hey, Bradley, hey, let's have a meeting. You know, you're not playing as amazing as you have the last couple of years. It's a lot of money. You're going to be in like your early to mid-30s by the time this deal concludes. What do you think about like a little haircut? I know we've just like been begging you to stay for like three straight years. What do you think about like you take like 90% of your max? How do you think that would go over with Bradley Beal?
That probably wouldn't go over. That the option letter would probably be filed by his agent, Mark Borlstein, as far as for that. I don't think that would go over very well, but that's the, you know, like, usually what happens with these extensions is that you're basically paying for the past, not what's going to happen down the road. And that's where you get yourself in the most trouble. But what are your options for teams, right? Like, you just basically cross your fingers. Hopefully it works out and that player somehow reverts back to that all-star. Harden, man, but that's the commitment. When Brooklyn made the trade, did they think they were going to get the James Harden we see now? No, but their options are limited unless they do want to, you know, figure out the sign and trade method there. Like, I hear Philadelphia. I get it.
I was going to say, I can think of one.
I hear it. And it's out there, and I know it's being talked about just based on the relationship with Daryl and James and stuff. And yeah, I mean, if the Simmons situation hasn't been resolved, I think that's something that you will probably look at when, you know, we get into the offseason.
And then Daryl and James would have their tearful reunion where they sit down and talk about analytically sophisticated shot selection, and, you know, it's the whole thing. I don't know. Who the hell knows? Well, that was my next question. Like, is there anything on Ben Simmons? I mean, do we have anything? Is there anything? Is there anything going on? Because I haven't heard anything. I think Indiana would and has kicked the tires, but without Brogdon, I just don't see a pathway to a deal there. Minnesota, same thing. I think both those things would have to be a three-team deal. Portland, you know, clearly CJ is not going to get it done without a whole bundle of picks. To me, the Simmons, CJ McCollum, and look, CJ McCollum now has a collapsed lung, so we don't even know when he's coming back. To me, the sweet spot where the rubber meets the road for both teams is McCollum, two first-round picks, and we can fight about the protection, and we will.
Yeah.
But it's got to be two. Two is better than one for Philly, and three is too many for me if I'm Portland and I'm facing what might be some pain, even if we get Simmons. And Nasir Little or Anfernee Simons, pick one. That's the package where I think if that's not a landing spot, then we do not have a landing spot that doesn't involve Damian Lillard.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the most that you can do, you know, certainly with, you mentioned the picks as far as two, but from an appeal from Philly's standpoint, it's like, you know, certainly CJ because of the salary and certainly because of the value. And then it's got to be one of the other young players, because after that, Zach, like, what's left, right? Covington doesn't do it for me. Nurkic, where do you, doesn't fill in the, you know, a need. I mean, there's so many guys that have been multiple, you know, the Dennis Smith, Zeller, Snell, like McLemore, like, man, they were a lot of former lottery picks.
The Sixers don't even need a backup center. Like, you want to throw Larry Nance out there? Like, what? I mean, I love Larry Nance, but George Niang has been incredible as a backup four for Philly, and Andre Drummond has been totally fine as a backup five. Like, that's not even that appealing to me. I will say this. The Sixers, you know, you're getting to a point where, I mean, I watched Joel Embiid come back and, like, just laid waste to everything in front of him. Even against Utah last night, and Philly got rolled by the Jazz, who are just really impressive lately. Like, the only shot they had was Embiid, and he was fantastic. He was dominant. He broke up like six alley-oops defending one-on-two in against Utah's pick and roll, which is as deadly a pick and roll as there is in the NBA. And it would hurt my heart if I were the Sixers to really just throw away a season like this, because you are throwing it away. I'm sorry to say it, and I understand why you're doing it, and I've generally applauded them playing hardball with Simmons on multiple fronts, including the trade front, but let's call it what it is. You're throwing away a season, and Joel Embiid is out there gutting it out for 40 minutes a game, dominating games, and you can't win enough. And at some point, it's like, what are we doing here? And that package that I just mentioned, if CJ McCollum were healthy, and he's not, that's one that I'm getting enough that I at least have to think about it. And if that's a no for Philly, I just don't know, barring something dramatic happening in some places, we can talk about those places. I just don't know what's happening this year.
Well, and especially that, you know, with Simmons and McCollum, as far as CJ being the centerpiece, you look around, there's like, there is nothing else better than that right now. I mean, we can go through the different teams there, but the one question I have, you know, for Philly is, are we content basically punting on the Simmons trade stuff until the off season if there's nothing to our liking when we get to February 10th? Like, so you have to live with that, right? You got to live with that if there's nothing there, that he's not going to be on the court for you when we get to the playoffs here, and you're basically going to roll with the same roster.
I want to say this carefully. This is just my speculation. It's only my speculation. A team I'm watching to come off the top rope with something interesting, if they continue sputtering along, which is exactly what they're doing, is Boston. Boston is 13-13. That's not good enough. You and I were both high on Boston.
Yeah,
I think we had good reason to be high on Boston.
Top four, top five for me.
Now, well, their schedule this month is brutal, and they could be easily three games under 500 the next time we talk. I don't know even what it would look like, but I just know at some point that mix is not getting you to where you think it should go, and you have to ask a question as a franchise. Is it the two best players are not amplifying each other and the rest of the team to the degree that we think they should? Or is it that we have the wrong group of players around them? And I just think it's early to ask that question now. I don't expect Boston to do anything dramatic this season because Tatum and Brown are so damn good. And by the way, Tatum has found his stride in the last couple weeks and is playing with more decisiveness and attacking mentality that everyone wants to see. At some point, they are going to ask that question. I don't think it's going to be this year, and we'll see how the rest of the season goes. But they're just not there. And again, Jaylen Brown's hurt. He's missed the last bunch of games. They're just still not good enough.
Well, and especially that, you know, when you have teams that still have all their first-round picks, then you certainly have to circle them. And then when you have, you know, Josh Richardson and Marcus Smart, you know, $30 million in contracts there. Certainly, you know, Horford is a big number. And then you've got a mix of all these former first round picks that, so there are things there to get a deal done. Now it's a question is that, are you willing to kind of push multiple ones kind of to the middle here and do something drastic right now? Or you get Jaylen Brown back healthy, you kind of reassess and figure out where you are.
Rapid fire number two, the Lakers are a mess. They're also 500. They had just an absolutely embarrassing loss to the Grizzlies last night without Ja Morant and Dylan Brooks. Is there anything they can do? I believe Horton Tucker is trade eligible soon.
January 15th for him.
January 15th.
Yeah.
Kendrick Nunn is trade eligible soon.
Yep.
I believe they can trade one future first round pick now.
That's correct.
But I don't think two, because New Orleans has that weird thing where they can defer one of the picks they get a year, right? So they can only trade one first round pick.
Unless 27 or 28 they can move, because of the Pelicans have the right to defer the 2024 first to 25, and then you do the 2-year rule. So it's either 27 or 28 that they can move.
Anything?
What you see is what you get. That's my theme for them. And I think that's, you know, based on your value contract is Horton Tucker. And then after that is basically cobbling Kendrick Nunn, who hasn't stepped on the court, with maybe one of the minimum guys to get you to see if you can get a $9 to $10 million guy. That's it.
It's rough right now
for
the Lakers. Now, that said, they looked good against Boston a couple of days ago, kind of a stirring home win for them. You know
who my wild card team is? Memphis. And I think Memphis is my wild card team every year, though, because they still have the expiring contracts. They've got draft assets. They got first round picks. They got a heck of a coach, man, who's keeping this team together here. That's my wild card team through all this. Not for a particular player, but just as far as the right mix of contracts and draft assets out there.
Well, Slo-Mo is one of the most obvious trade candidates in the league. Is sort of, I don't want to say he's superfluous there, but his role has diminished there, and he's expiring, and I'm not sure they're in a hurry to pay him. I'm not even sure what his market value is going to be. I can't be done with the Lakers yet, though. I just can't.
Oh, let's go. Sorry, I jumped the gun.
The more I watch them, and I was a little pessimistic about the Lakers before the season. I don't even know what to think of them anymore, because they don't look good, and yet they've been such a mess in terms of injuries, including to LeBron James, and Nunn hasn't played, and Ariza hasn't played, and Horton Tucker just got back and is now shooting 22% on threes. In terms of lineup machinations, they seem to have now settled, thank God, on we're starting Anthony Davis at center, because that's the only hope of us scoring enough points with Russ, LeBron, and AD on the floor. If DJ's there, we're not going to do it. If Dwight's there, we're not going to do it. They're seeming to settle on a rotation a little bit. And they have, again, I said this last week with McMenamin, they have no lineup that has played more than 53 minutes this season. Every other team in the league has like two or three lineups that have played at least 53 minutes. That's indicative of just how much churn there has been and how much availability has been an issue. So on the one hand, you want to say maybe they can stabilize once they get everybody. On the other hand, LeBron doesn't look right yet. AD's jumper isn't falling. Russ is a disaster every other game, and every other game he looks okay. And you just look at this, and it's like, Wayne Ellington? Like, really? I know LeBron lifts up at all boats, but like, this dude couldn't get on the floor for the freaking Pistons. And I like Wayne Ellington. He's had some nice years in the league, particularly in Miami. Malik Monk's defense this year has been a huge disappointment. I thought maybe he'd be more engaged with the Lakers. Maybe he's just not good at it. Carmelo is doing his job, which is to hit threes and hit the occasional long two. You just can't play Carmelo Anthony this many minutes in the year of our basketball gods 2022, which it almost is, and think you're winning the championship. I just don't know. I don't know what this is. I'll tell you what the problem is not, though, is Frank Vogel.
No,
Frank
I
Vogel
agree.
Is not the problem. Now, was he too loyal to DJ and the bigger lineup constructions? Maybe, but that's been corrected. When you look at everyone that's been available, you look at the roster, like, the mirror has to shine on the front office, not the coaching staff, because this roster just doesn't look very good. And a lot of people questioned, why did you get Russ? You traded an entire functional team for Russ. And I think they need time. But I don't think Frank Vogel's the problem. And people want to say, every time they have a bad loss like last night, you see, well, they're not playing hard for Frank Vogel. This is a problem. Well, they played hard for him two nights before against Boston. And like, it was basically yesterday that they played so hard defensively that he was credited, along with LeBron and Anthony Davis, for instilling this defense from his mentality that won them the championship, like, basically yesterday.
There is a reason why the 10 or 11 players that are on veteran minimum contracts were still on the free agent board, right? There's a reason why they were veteran. They were signed to the veteran minimum, Zach. There was no better offer for Malik Monk out there. And yes, you could maybe say Kent Bazemore could have gotten $600,000 more in Golden State, or, you know, Trevor Ariza, and we can go down a list of there's a reason why they're here. And I always say, like, when you sign veteran minimums, like, the goal is to kind of break, hit, go 500. Like, you can get away with signing Patty Mills, James Johnson, and LaMarcus Aldridge, right? Patty's a little bit more than the veteran minimum, but guys like those, you know, those fringe, you know, signings there, trimming around the edges. But when you sign 11 guys to the veteran minimum, it is impossible. I don't care if you have LeBron James at his peak and you're basically just throwing different things out there, and it's going to happen again. Like, this is going to happen this offseason again. Like, these guys are going to be free agents, and you're going to be stuck with Russ and LeBron and AD. And you're going to have to go through the same routine again here. And I know Kendrick Nunn hasn't been healthy and hasn't played. I know they've had some injuries, and certainly there's some things there. But, like what was to be expected from a coaching standpoint when you're basically just trying to mix and match different lineups, and your tradable assets were traded in the Westbrook trade with, when you break up that contract with Kuzma, KCP, Montrezl? Yeah, they're not, you know, A-level players, but there's something that you could have maybe used down the road. Caruso, you know, I know that horse has been...
They're all playing well. Yeah. Every single one of them is playing really well.
Yeah, I mean, and I know the Caruso signing or not signing was certainly, there was some tax implications there, and I get it. I understand. But when you have guys under your roof and you can sign them and exceed the cap, I'd rather take my chances on Alex Caruso for $8 million than basically taking a patchwork of veteran minimums. At least I know what I have already.
I'm glad you brought up Bazemore because people have forgotten about him. I thought he was maybe the most important of the minimum acquisitions for his potential to be a two-way, 3-and-D kind of player for them. Him being a disaster this season is a huge deal that has kind of been, I think, under the radar. And look, I still think if LeBron and AD are healthy and they're in their absolute peak form, that solves almost every problem that you can possibly create for a basketball team. I also think it's like we have to start asking, is it realistic to expect that kind of LeBron, MVP-level LeBron? Maybe he really is biding his time, and the free throw decline and the rebounding decline and the decline on defense, maybe that's all just biding his time. But at some point, you know, you got to stop biding your time because you're 10th in the West or whatever, and you're biding your time for nothing anymore. You're not biding your time for anything. So, you know, we'll see. They deserve some patience and some time, but it's not going awesome. I still, by the way, I don't even check Russell Westbrook's ball screens anymore on Second Spectrum because the number is zero every game. He had one game against Memphis where he set 7, and clearly someone had a meeting or something where, like, hey, can you do this? And he did it. And, you know, I don't like doing that. I will say he's shooting 53% on corner threes. That's encouraging. That's a place to put him on offense. And I'm not being facetious. Like, he can be there a lot. He can, if he can make that shot and get them moving in transition, run the offense when LeBron rests, like, that's a really good use of a guy. You can get 20 and 10 that way. Last thing I want to go through with you is, you know, the lack of sellers, I think, is going to be a big issue around the trade deadline. You've got all the tanking teams, Orlando, Houston, Oklahoma City, Detroit. It's a pretty short list of guys. I wonder if you have any intel or thoughts on any of these names. You ready?
Yep.
Eric Gordon, Christian Wood, Daniel Tice, Jeremy Grant, potentially the belle of the ball, and I think a name to watch, Kelly Olynyk, Terrence Ross, and Kenrich Williams. Am I missing some names, or do you have any thoughts on any of those?
No,
names?
Those are the same. I mean, yeah, I mean, I had a couple guys in Detroit, certainly the, you know, Corey Joseph, Diallo, guys like that, certainly. I don't have many sellers, though. You know, and I even put Oklahoma City a little bit on a buyer's list just because they're $34 million below the cap and $23 below the floor. I mean, like, eventually you're going to have to take some contracts in there, and I think I think Orlando could be a buyer because they've got that monster trade exception if they're trying to help a team maybe save some tax money and there. So I think Terrence Ross is a really good name just based on where that Magic team is, and he's got 2 years left on his contract, right? So if you're looking for a wing to come off your bench, great name. Jeremy Grant is interesting because you probably could have maximized his value a year ago more than what it is right now, right? But I understand why Detroit probably held on to him. Christian Wood, his value is probably at an all-time high right now. He's got this year and next year left. For Houston, you've got all these guys. You know, you've got Daniel House, Eric Gordon, Augustine. You know, there's a mix of veterans there that you have if a team wants one of those guys. But no, I think you hit it right on the head as far as, you know, Kendrick Williams, man. Talk about one of probably the best contracts in the NBA. Where
you know what he is? You know what he is? A basketball player. He does every single thing pretty damn well, including shoot threes. One of the stats of the year is the Thunder have a positive scoring margin with Kenrich Williams on the floor. I believe they have the worst scoring margin in the NBA, not helped by a 73-point loss. They're plus something with him on the floor because he fills every gap. He does everything well. He's just a good basketball player.
Which is crazy because when they did that trade for the Steven Adams trade, right? They basically had to do a sign-in trade with Kendrick just to make the money work. He was like the Keith Bogans of 11 years ago when you basically have to add money to a deal to make it work. And God, he's got a team option or a non-guaranteed for next year, and it's probably one of the best contracts out there.
Last one. On the flip side of that, I think the most obvious trade package in the entire league that will be put in play, if it's not in play already, is Dario Saric plus Jalen Smith plus a first-round pick. I think the Suns will and should absolutely explore what they can get for that as a starting point. Do you see any names for them? What do they even need? I mean, even JaVale McGee as backup center has been a home run. I think they could use someone in the kind of Torrey Craig role that they had last year, whether it's a three or a four.
Thaddeus Young do anything for you?
That's been the name. He can barely get on the floor for the Spurs. I think for that price, I'm staying away from Thaddeus Young.
Yeah.
But I think that package of things will be put in play because they're trying to win the championship, and they should be. They're that good.
Yeah, I mean, you have two players that are, you know, Sarge is hurt, and Jalen Smith is, you know, not, you know, they declined as the rare declining of the third year, you know, team option in the rookie contract, and they can trade a 24 first because that pick's going to go to the one in the Chris Paul trade is going to go to Oklahoma City this year, so you can do that. And you know, you add those guys up and you get to, you know, $11, $12 million. So that gets you a pretty good, you know, pretty good player if it's there.
So I was beating the drum on Kenrich Williams for them last year. Obviously, Kenrich Williams makes like no money. So you'd have to figure out some sort of, you know, salary matching and stuff, even though, as you said, the Thunder need all the money they can get. I don't really see Eric Gordon as a great fit there. I don't really see Terrence Ross as a great fit there. Jeremy Grant is the home run fit for them. I just don't know if they have enough to get him. Do I have to throw Cam Johnson in at that point? Am I doing that? Wouldn't surprise me if there are some exploratory talks between the Suns and the Pistons. And again, to be clear, this is just me spitballing. I have no reporting of this. That's the name that if I'm throwing all my chips in, I'm trying to get that name. Now, again, that's a tax issue for them going forward because he makes a lot of money. The thing is, though, JaVale's been so good. The other guy that I was beating the drum for there last year was Larry Nance Jr. Now, we'll see if Portland's ever open to moving him. JaVale's been good enough that I don't really feel like I need a backup five. That's kind of a luxury. Can he play the four for me? I mean, he's been better as a five than a four in Portland, but that's another name I'd look at if Portland ever showed any interest in moving him.
Well, and the other thing that Phoenix has done a good job with is that they're one of those teams that are well below the tax where they can move one of these, you know, combine these two guys and take back a $17, $18 million guy and still stay under, right? So from a financials angle, that is in play there. So I mean, their window, you know, I mean, I know we don't want to talk about windows, but I mean, here, they're there, man, right?
Their window is Chris Paul's health.
Yeah.
As long as Chris Paul's healthy and playing like this, their window's open.
That's right.
Bobby Marks, December 15th is not far away. The chatter is only going to heat up. We're going to need your expertise, your matrices, your highlighters, your charts, your emails, all of it. You are absolutely a home run at your job. We love having you. Enjoy your weekend. Enjoy Florida. Stay safe, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Zach. Appreciate it.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.